Chapter 10, The 7 Steps of Problem Solving. The extreme time zone difference between the United States and China put a strain on the work schedules of those who worked in export manufacturing. King Chemical worked a regular day from just after breakfast until dinner time, which kept me busy during the days that I visited, but then everyone at Johnson Carter was in the New York office when it was late in China, which often meant a long night of emails and telephone calls as well. The only free time that I could count on was in the late afternoon, the few hours just before everyone in the United States was getting into work. It was during this small window of time that I would try to catch up on sleep. While catnapping, my dreams increasingly turned to manufacturing, and sometimes I would close my eyes and find myself in the factory, except instead of chasing after schedules, I was on the production line myself. These were quality control nightmares. I was the one who was capping and labeling bottles, and when mistakes were discovered, fingers were pointed at me. It was from one of these disturbing dreams that I awoke in my hotel room and went to the bathroom only to discover that the toilet was not working. The hotel had 5 stars. It was among one of the finest in the city. Does nothing work here? I thought twice before calling the front desk to complain, if only because fixing some things in China often proved too much of a hassle. And so I was pleasantly surprised when the front desk manager expressed enthusiasm about handling the problem herself. All over South China, in the hotels and in the factories, there was a hop-to-it attitude that was disarming. Though the toilet was not what anyone would have considered a serious problem, it was comforting to see that the hotel staff was treating the matter as if it were. The front desk manager arrived with 2 colleagues, a boy in a work shirt and a woman from housekeeping. The 3 stood in the bathroom considering the toilet, while I waited in the room. They were concentrating hard on the problem, like a group of aerospace engineers attempting to work out a design flaw on a manned space mission. I could hear them murmuring from just outside the doorway, and I listened as they worked the lever of the toilet. After some time, they emerged from the bathroom, and the front desk manager announced that they were finished. She said that the issue had been resolved. The front desk manager was particularly happy with the result, and she beamed with pride. I thanked her while giving myself a little pat on the back for this one minor victory in quality control. You see, I told myself, not everything in this place was a disaster. You had to be hopeful and patient, and it didn't hurt sometimes to be lucky. On her way out, the front desk manager smiled and gave me a knowing look. We should not forget the favor that she had just done. It was as though we now had a relationship, and the secret we shared was a crediting of accounts. The 3 hotel employees were about to disappear down the hall when I felt the hairs rise up on the back of my neck. It was a sensation that I had come to associate with imminent regret, a locally developed instinct. I asked them to wait a moment. Deng Yixia! The 3 of them froze while I went into the bathroom. The front desk manager tiptoed in after me. What's the matter? She asked, her voice sounding meek. I jiggled the lever of the toilet, but there was no response. It doesn't work, I said. She had made a face that showed disappointment and bewilderment, as though she had managed to get the toilet to work just a moment before, and that it had decided by itself to stop functioning again. She pressed the lever and focused her concentration. The toilet made a loud hissing sound. You see, she said, it does work. The toilet made a noise, but it was not the sound of flushing water. It clearly did not work, and I told her so. While we were both looking at the same problem, she was simply choosing not to see it. More than that, it seemed, she was hoping that I would share her view. Most of her disappointment, it seemed, was reserved for me, because I would not entertain her own version of reality. I went through the exact same situation with Chinese manufacturers. Staring at a label that was supposed to have been printed in yellow ink, we would be looking at a brown label instead, and the factory owner would insist that it was yellow. It was the old business about the tree in the woods. If a tree falls and there is no one to hear it, did it actually make a sound? In China, not only did it matter that someone was there, but if there were at least 2 people present, they could together agree on any version of events. There might not have been any tree at all, but they could insist that there was one. A mighty, magnificent tree, one that stood tall, which was thousands of years old. The front desk manager was sticking with her story. But it makes a noise, she said. You can hear it yourself. The housekeeper looked at me in an eager way also, as if she agreed with this alternative interpretation of events, and hoped that I would too. They were double-teaming me now. We had entered into the next phase, the one where denial turned into bargaining. The four of us entered into a discussion on the definition of a working toilet. Was a toilet that made only noise considered a working toilet or a broken one? The front desk manager said that, while I had a point in suggesting that the toilet might be malfunctioning, I had to admit that it was not completely broken. She had an opinion that was partially based in logic, and it was pointless to refute her view. In order to move things forward, there was nothing to do but to concede the point. The toilet was not completely broken, I admitted, and this concession seemed to satisfy her, for the moment at least. Chinese manufacturers pulled the same move. They wanted an importer to admit that a problem was not all that bad, if only because it shored up their negotiating position. Problems that were seen as less serious required less attention and fewer resources. It was a preemptive move. If we all agreed that the problem was not so serious, then when the problem was blown off, or if it later was determined that it could not be fixed, then it could be seen as less of a failure. Having discovered this middle ground, the hotel staff returned to the problem at hand, and for the first time since they arrived, they attempted to solve the problem in earnest. This time, I could hear the clang of the ceramic lid as it was removed from the tank, and the sloshing around of water suggested that someone was investigating the workings of an internal mechanism. After a few minutes, they emerged from the bathroom, and the front desk manager admitted now that there was no change with things. She then politely asked me if it would be possible for me to accept the situation as it was. Accept the situation? This was another move that I was familiar with from my work in the factories. There was hardly a mess that needed fixing that someone did not first attempt to get the importer to accept. The appeal was always an emotional one, and when it was directed at me, the suggestion was that I let it slide for the sake of our relationship. It made logical sense to pursue the option anyway. If someone presented you with a problem and you could convince that person to accept the situation as unresolved, did it not have the same effect as fixing the problem itself? When it came to problem solving, Westerners often wanted answers to silly questions, such as, what is the cause of this problem exactly, and what are the options? Asked to accept the broken toilet, the ball was now in my court. The pressure was on me. Having been asked politely to withdraw my request for a repair, I was reminded of suppliers who took the same approach to basic quality problems. In a polite world, when someone asked you for a favor, the underlying expectation was that you would understand and comply. What's the problem, exactly? I asked. It was the sort of question meant to elicit information. It was not meant to be an accusation or an insinuation of any sort, but it was apparently the wrong button to push at the wrong time. I was not prepared for what happened next. The front desk manager's tone changed in a sudden flash, and this time she minced no words. It is very strange, don't you think? What's strange? That your toilet is broken. She raised an eyebrow at me. Excuse me? We have many rooms in this hotel, as you know. And? And only yours is broken. The manager waited for me to absorb her suggestion, and I suppressed the urge to roll my eyes. I did not break your toilet, I said. Oh? Are you sure? She looked smug, and I found myself now on the defensive. We had wasted the better part of an hour, and I now wondered, how did we get here? One moment, the manager showed up at my room, bright-eyed, and acting as though she would bend over backwards to help solve this problem. The next moment, claws were out, and it looked as though I might now get billed for damages. Customer service had come a long way in China, but some instincts died hard. The Cultural Revolution ingrained certain survival skills in people, one of which had to do with defending oneself against perceived face loss. The answer when threatened was to strike back fast and hard, and not to relent, until the threatening party retreated. If someone might cause you trouble, you had to get them to back off, at all costs. Face was an important concept across Asia, but in no other territory around the region was it combined with so much aggression. That all of this was happening in a five-star hotel made no difference. We were still in China, a country that had a long cultural tradition, one that had only recently emerged from a period of political turmoil. From other experiences, I knew that the smallest incident in China could snowball into an utter mess, and a simple apology was not necessarily going to reverse the current situation. I needed to get us back on track as quickly as possible, and making a show of weakness through an apology was not exactly the best response. Is this a 5-star hotel? It was a question meant to dig me out of a hole. Of course it is, the manager said, in a tone that suggested, what nerve? Trying to sound as polite as possible, I asked whether the manager believed that a 5-star hotel ought to have rooms with functioning toilets. It was a small piece of logic, one that could not be so easily dismissed or twisted around. Maybe she saw the point I was trying to make, or maybe she understood from my tone that I was not purposefully trying to ruin her. The front desk manager's demeanor changed again, another switching of channels, and this time she appeared more like a little girl asking for my forgiveness. She offered me a number of excuses for why the toilet didn't work. The reasons were random, and one had nothing to do with the other. The least plausible of them was that my room was located on an upper floor, and so there was not enough water pressure for the toilet to function properly. Basically, I was welcome to choose whichever explanation I liked best, and this was also no different from what happened at the factories. When quality went bad, we were given a potpourri of excuses, a cornucopia of cop-outs. It was the supplier's fault. It was the trucking company that was responsible. It was the fault of one of the workers, but don't worry about speaking with him directly, because that individual was just fired. The litany of excuses was just another step in the problem-solving process. It was not meant to be taken seriously, just as pointing a finger in my direction was not about an actual shift in blame. In China, problem-solving involved a degree of zigzag. You had to do the dance. You had to have patience and faith. And you had to give those who offered to solve a problem the chance to come around on their own. My German client complained that his suppliers never understood the value of getting straight to the point. They were perpetually beating around the bush. There was nothing schnell about the way they handled any situation. China might be modernizing, it might even one day lead the world, in a peaceful rise naturally, but the basic mechanics of getting anything done were still a challenge. Foreign companies looking to accomplish anything in this growing market had to understand the extent to which the economy remained hindered by enduring instances of cultural backwardness. We were at the end of the road on this toilet business. The front desk manager looked disappointed, and I was disheartened in my own way. China was a place filled with promises and regrets, and I felt sad not for the front desk manager who had tried and failed to fix a piece of plumbing, but for the broader mechanism that was broken down. In the end, none of us even knew what was wrong with the toilet. Not a single clue had been uncovered, and we were about to leave off with no plan for moving forward. On the way out, the front desk manager asked if there was anything else that she could do for me. This would be the time, she probably thought, when a customer would ask for something, some kind of consideration, like a lowered room rate. I told the manager that I was fine. She asked if I would like to change rooms. With only 2 days left until the weekend, I told her that it was not necessary. She apologized in a despairing way and explained that she needed to get going. It was getting late, she said. I told her that I understood. As she was about to leave, she paused by the door and in a voice that was barely audible said that tomorrow things might be better. The hotel had an engineer who fixed things like toilets. He was actually in charge of plumbing for the entire hotel. The engineer would have been up to my room to fix the toilet himself, except that it was his night off. It was the last stage of the problem-solving process. For reasons that defied logic, it came closer to the end. It was that moment when the skies opened and the sun came shining through, and the truth shall set you free. Why such a basic piece of information came only after so much wrangling was anyone's guess. But then the entire process of solving problems in China was itself an enigma. China's economy was already larger than that of many developed nations, but this did not mean that its culture was keeping pace, and those who came to China to do business, or even diplomacy, had to know the extent to which the place was different.